Welcome to the Akashic Reading Podcast, presented by AkashicReading.com, the place where you can learn to access your soul's wisdom, or at least stop digging the hole any deeper. I'm your host, Terry Uptana, and today we'll be looking at how your Akashic Relationship book can help you understand the full spectrum of purpose and lessons for a given event or relationship, or even lead you to realize there aren't any at all. There are a number of ways to get information in the Akashics concerning any given relationship. In a soul book, there's the current life section, which has relationship information spread throughout, as this informs quite a bit of what has, is, and could be going on in the person's life. There's also the past life section, where we can see who we've interconnected with in previous incarnations. And there's the relationship map, which takes up the entirety of Section 6. It shows all of the historical, current, and possible relationships and gives access to detailed information about the individuals involved. The relationship map tracks relationships such as the soul's family trees, both biological and marital, significant relationships such as long-term committed partners, adoptions, long-term friendships, dating couples, colleagues, mentors and mentees, students and teachers, patient and healthcare professionals, and on and on. And it digs even deeper by recording service and delivery people the soul is in contact with, salespeople, customer service and retail employees, acquaintances, people they meet only once for a day or an hour, people they meet and speak to for a moment, and people they barely notice, or those they notice but who do not notice them. Anyone who has an impact on us, whether we know it or not, is noted in this section, and vice versa. Because of this, I'm sometimes curious and yet slightly horrified to contemplate the relationship maps of famous figures, such as celebrities, politicians, or CEOs. But that's only half the story. For no matter what is happening in the moment, no matter that we may have completely forgotten who we truly are, or were anything other than physical, we are still spiritual beings living an embodied life. Our souls power this whole enterprise, and they are in our relationships as well. Their effects are behind the scenes, but work in a number of ways, many times without our even knowing it. One of these is if a soul is currently and actively providing a spiritual service of some kind, such as we see with white lighters. These people are fairly easy to spot, and so is their influence. You may recognize this effect in public figures such as the Dalai Lama, former U.S. President Jimmy Carter, Bono, Gloria Steinem, Pema Chodron, and Edna Adan. While they live an embodied life just as others do, they also work to live their beliefs, to have their lives match the truth of their souls, and act to help others do so as well by creating a better, healthier, fair, and just world. Their soul purpose radiates in every action they take and guides them directly and indirectly. Just being in their presence blesses and challenges us, whether through inspiration or aggravation, to do the same. Their soul purpose has become the dominant feature of their lives as they have chosen to live who they truly are. Many thousands of others do so as well in less public or publicly worthy ways. And it's not all or nothing. You needn't be a guru or political activist to live your truth and be of service. A person who volunteers in a soup kitchen or a food share or local charity or aid project shares in this model of living to the degree which suits them. Another way the soul affects relationships is through pre-planned events. These are things we want to accomplish, things we agree to do prior to embodiment, and things we need to do in order for important events in our lives to occur. Our soul knows the schedule and works behind the scenes through a variety of means to help us reach these landmarks, providing the support, signals, and necessary actions to get us on the right path or off to the next agenda item. And there are many events, milestones, and triggers throughout each life which help us achieve our pre-planned goals and life lessons, while keeping us in this place of forgetfulness so our free will is unhindered and we're able to focus on and fully experience embodied life. Some of these events include chance encounters where we meet friends at school who become lifelong companions, events which lead us to take on a career or a spiritual practice, an art form whose practice leads us into service work and a passion for living, a chance occurrence which leads us to travel somewhere we would never have gone, getting stuck somewhere which leads us to an aha moment, or a happy accident which leads us where we were supposed to be all along. The relationship map in your soul book keeps track of all these variables: the physical relationships of embodied beings, the soul relationships of human beings, and all of the shifting natures of those relationships, including new beginnings, maturation, and endings. Added to this are the roles we've chosen to live and to act out for others. Part of creating an embodied life plan is working with our soul group and others to decide what lessons we'll work on in this life, what challenges we will accept, and what we need to achieve them. As each embodying soul does the same, a list of roles, responsibilities, options, opportunities, and play activities arise. Each is sorted through, accepted, and assigned as part of the process. For example, one soul might need to be the grandfather for the group. This means he'll need to find souls from outside the group who will agree to be his parents, who will provide him a childhood which meets his personal needs, which match his requirements of ethnicity, culture, economics, and so on, and those of his group. He will then need to make arrangements with a variety of souls for marriage, or he may choose to work with a soul from his group as a wife, although with free will, no partnership of this kind can be guaranteed to occur. He'll need to arrange with the souls who will be his children to provide the parenting arrangement, which will be of benefit to them, also possibly making an arrangement with their possible spouses, and then with the souls who will be his grandchildren, in order to provide them with the relationship they need. And this is just the basics. These notes in the soul book give deep dives on the reasons why a relationship is happening, what is intended versus what is actually coming to pass, and the plans for how things may go in the future. If the two people are part of the same soul group, then there will also be notes about the relationship in the soul group record, all of which has the potential to be immensely informative, but in practice is often fairly useless. This is because to read data of this nature requires a clear head and an open mind, both of which are often missing when it comes to topics where we have a deep emotional investment. In other words, to be able to read any of this material, we need to be objective and not care about the outcome. However, when it comes to relationships, the primary reason we go looking for information is we can't be objective and we're absolutely intent on our desired outcome. Luckily, there's another resource available which is geared towards helping us with this exact situation. Every embodied person has their own Akashic room. This is a place which is only for them and reflects the physical life they're currently living. Each object, color, and dimension are a reflection of the individual and holds a tremendous amount of information which can help them live the life they desire and to their fullest potential. There are dinner tables good for working on projects or studying records. There are sitting areas for meeting with guides or other beings. There are even workshop areas for processing ideas or working through manifestation plans. Along with all of this is usually a bed for personal reflection and soul investigation. This is usually where records concerning the practicalities of a person's spiritual path are examined, where information concerning major life decisions is presented, and where new aspects of an embodied life can be unfolded for those ready to transform. It's also the space most often used for reading information about the higher self, as well as aspects of the soul's beingness outside of embodied life. There's often a table or end table situated near the bed in an Akashic room. While this could be like our current aesthetic of a bed table, it usually presents as in harmony with the bed and other furniture. This means it could be a washing stand which has been converted for storage, a dressing table with attached mirror, or a small bookcase. I've even seen one which was steampunk in nature, with mechanisms lifting trays filled with liquor bottles and carafes. The table may be near the head of the bed, but could also be by the foot or a bit to the side, so you may need to do a bit of exploration. In or on the table will be what appears to be a leather-bound book or journal of some kind. Unlike a soul book, which is massive, ancient, leather-bound, and often held together with huge piano hinges, this book will be the same size or slightly larger than a regular hardback book. This is the individual's relationship book. A relationship book is much more like an e-reader or tablet than a physical book. It provides a means for the individual to request information about a relationship and have the information presented in a form which is easy to access and absorb. When the person asks to see information about someone they have a relationship with, whether a parent, sibling, child, or significant other, the book will pull up all the relevant details. How the information is requested informs what and how the book will present things. If asked simply to show information about the relationship, the book will sort through everything relevant, then produce whatever is the highest priority for the reader to know in the first few pages. This usually presents like an adult version of a child's pop-up book, where vignettes open up and unfold so they can be viewed three-dimensionally. It's not uncommon for there to be several pages which work as a sort of overview or summary of major relationship aspects. So, opening to the first two pages shows the main gist of the relationship. The next two will have an aspect which is highly influential to the reader's life, then the next two an issue which needs work, and so on. Beyond the opening pop-up pages are what I term portals. They're pages which look like they have pictures on them, but the pictures are actually doors or access points where the reader can enter into the information, somewhat like putting on a virtual reality helmet. Focusing on the picture allows the person to enter it. While nothing can be changed or manipulated, the reader is able to witness the events unfolding in real time. Each page refers to pertinent information about the relationship. This might reveal outside influences which are intruding on things, underlying motivations which have gone unspoken, or aspects of the other or the reader which have gone unexamined and yet are deeply influential in various situations. Asking a specific question about the relationship will change how things are presented. If there's a single clear answer, then usually a picture portal is provided on the first page, which not only gives the answer, but also allows the reader to dig in more fully. If the answer requires explanation or is complicated, then the pop-up form might come first, or even a hologram-style visual which floats above the page. Portal pages may follow, or the pop-ups themselves might convert to portals after initial viewing. If the answer is no, or the question is posed in such a way it's impossible to answer, such as being too vague or broad, then the relationship book will open with blank pages. In this case, I recommend closing the book, rephrasing the question, then opening it again. Requests which consist mainly of whatever is for my best and highest good, or I leave it in your hands, or I give it up to God, fall into the too general category. I once had a group of guides point out to me that best and highest good is such a broad category for each individual soul, it includes both world peace and tuna sandwiches. While the beings who work with us are clear on what is for our best and highest good in all aspects of our embodied life, it's important to remember this very key item. They're not responsible for it, which means they often can't respond to these requests even though the information is important, relevant, or even revolutionary. This doesn't mean you should stop wanting what is best for everyone or everything in any given situation. You can include it by adding and or whatever is for my best and highest good at the end of a request. However, making this phrase the meat of the message will usually get a refusal from a relationship book, as it simply has no means of deciding what or how that much information should be presented. On the other hand, being specific is good, but overly specific can also bring on blank pages. Specifics allow us to state what is non-negotiable about our question. For example, if we're trying to manifest a new job, it's important to state what kind we want, where we want it, what time frame, how much salary and benefits, and so on. This way we don't waste our time and whoever is helping us isn't wasting theirs by sorting through options which don't fit our needs. However, being too specific can make it impossible to get an answer. We see this often in unrequited love. One person wants to be loved, but the solution they've chosen is this one particular person. It can be someone they know, someone they've heard of, someone who has left them, or someone they've only seen once on TV. Whoever it is, they've decided it's the only answer as far as they're concerned, and so they've made every request about this one person and the life together which could be. Because this person can't be commanded to be available, to be what the requester needs, or to notice the request at all, there's never a direct answer. Relationship books are one of the easiest ways to find out if you've had a past life with someone, if the contract between you has to do with soul groups, or if you've pre-planned the connection at all. They can help you decipher why you chose your parents, whether or not what happened in and to your family was planned or influenced by free will choices, and what was the intended outcome of your childhood versus the lived experience of it. They can help you understand the full spectrum of purpose and lessons for a given event or lead you to realize there weren't any at all. There are also some things which a relationship book can't help you with. As the future isn't set or prescripted and everyone has free will in each moment, there is no way they can tell you what the future is for any given relationship. They can't say how long a loved one will live or how well. They aren't able to say whether or not someone will leave, although they can point to whether or not they're intending to do so. They can't determine ahead of time if a relationship will last, be good, provide happiness, or be the solution to your needs and desires. In the end, those things are up to you and your partner. A relationship book also has little to no information concerning a relationship which does not yet exist. It can't tell you if you're going to meet the one and live happily ever after, although it may be able to show you whether or not this is possible. For similar reasons, if your questions concern someone you'd like to connect with, it can tell you whether or not a contract already exists and what little information is written in it, but not much more than that. For questions about the possibilities for connecting with someone and what might come from the connection, it's better to use a problem-solving box. Each of us has a relationship book which can give us insights into our relationships and help us navigate through them. Are you ready to dive in? And that's all the time we have this week. If you're interested in knowing more, check out my website, akashicreading.com. Thank you to my patron of honor this week, Jennifer Keene. If you're enjoying this podcast, please consider supporting it by subscribing on Patreon. For just $5 a month, you can join in patron-only classes, get information about what workshops I'm offering, and see all my other offerings, as well as getting updates about what I'm working on at patreon.com/TerryUchtena. Thanks. Bye.